Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations in art, culture, and ideas. Today, we're going to speak to Dato' Ramli Ibrahim. He is a dancer, choreographer, and the founder of Sutra Foundation. We're going to be talking about his latest book, and this is a pictorial essay on his experiences at the Kumbh Mela, an event that has been declared by the United Nations as a part of the humanity's cultural heritage. And I don't know enough about it, and that's why I'm turning to Ramli now. Thank you so much, Ramli, for joining me. So the title is Kumbh Mela Prayag, which I believe is the place.
Yes.
And I'm sure I mangled the name. Joined in Dance, a Malaysia-India Experience. Ramli, let's just start from this. Kumbh Mela is very famous for those amazing images of literally millions of people. A lot of sadhus, you know, religious men, I guess it's mostly dominated by men, often naked.
Yes.
And, you know, covered with ash, running into the river. I think
Correct.
That's one of the most iconic moments of a Kumbh Mela.
Yes.
Tell us about the Kumbh Mela, the deep history, before we get to your particular involvement in the Kumbh Mela.
Right. I think mythically, the myth of origin of the Kumbh Mela is about the the gods and the demons, the anti-gods, were getting weak, and they wanted to have again the elixir of immortality, Amrita. So they churned this. They were told to churn this ocean. Besides other things that came out of it. Is this Amrita with in a kumbha or in a pot, and it was snatched by the demons, the anti-gods, and they were about to drink it when Vishnu decided to incarnate himself into Mohini, the enchantress, and managed to distract the anti-gods and grab the kumbha, and as she ran with it to give it back to the gods, some of them had dropped into these four places, into these rivers. And of course, the major part of it was in this place called Prayagraj, or Prayog, which had been named Allahabad during the Mughal times. And this is where we went. 17 of went at the noose of the confluence of the three rivers, Ganga, Yamuna, and Saraswati. Saraswati is from, mythically, is from underground. And this is where people had gathered. And the Kumbh Mela at Prayagraj is one of the biggest congregation of people on earth. And this is where UNESCO had named it as the intangible cultural humanity. And I think it is a universal thing of being cleansed by water. I think at one stage we had our Mandi Safa or Mandi Pantai in the East Coast and all these kind of things.
Still do Mandi Bunga.
We just do still exactly. And I think that effect of cleansing from one of the elements, one of the five elements, is still very, very important. And I think this is to do with that.
Right. How does dance come into this? Because I know the traditions in which you work in, Indian classical dance traditions, obviously borrow from the mythologies and stories
of
classic texts and whatnot, right? So, for you as a dancer, were you attracted to the Kumbh Mela because of its mythic character? Were you there because there is already a dance tradition associated with the Kumbh Mela?
Of course, mythically, a lot of our stories from the dance, both in Odissi and Bharatanatyam, had referred to the churning of the ocean where Shiva drank the poison, which is one of the outcome of the churning. The Kumbh Mela is also one of that. But I had established a very strong relationship with Uttar Pradesh, and I had performed for their chief minister, the very controversial Yogi Adityanath, who was also a very strong man in the Modi kind of thing. And I think 2019 is one of the strongest Kumbh Mela ever because of the election. If you remember, it was during this election that placed Modi back again into the second term of power. And, you know, I had performed in Uttar Pradesh, in Lucknow, Gorakhpur, one of the smaller towns, in Ayodhya. And, of course, I had been to Varanasi. And so they know me. So when they had this Kumbh Mela where they had invited more than 12,000 artists to perform, and it's going to be the great Kumbh Mela ever. And we were part of that. And we in Sutra had also had several exhibitions of the Kumbh Mela. The photographer Lalit Verma from Pondicherry had documented the Maha Kumbh Mela in Allahabad, in Haridwar, in Ujjain. So, you know, when we had the chance, when we invited to perform in Kumbh Mela, to be part of this great mass of performers and devotees, as you know, the agoras, the sadhus, the naga sadhus, and all that, we have to take it.
How is it for you? And I know your relationship to India is a long-standing one. You have other books. You know, photographic essays that you've published along those lines. But what is it for the young people that went for you? Because when looking at those photographs, what an extraordinary experience it must be for them coming from a country like Malaysia, where even at the largest point of a gathering, maybe a Thai Pussum or something like that would you experience that kind of the crush of humanity. What was it for them?
I know. You know, it was recorded like 175 million people had gathered during this 45 day of the Kumbh Mela. And so for the young kids, and I think quite about 9 of my outreach program, these are teenagers of about 14, 15 at that time, were part of this 17-member troop that came from Malaysia, that flew to Bangalore, and then flew to Delhi, and then take a bus to Allahabad, to Prayagraj. So it was a wonderful experience. This is what the book is about. It come from also their point of view. They give their kind of impression of this incredible festival. Some of them have never been outside Malaysia. So I think this is a wonderful celebration of, you know, not just a bilateral cultural experience between Malaysia and India, but also a kind of a pure joyous experience for some of my dancers, and I think it comes out in this this book with wonderful photography.
Well, I want to ask you if the young people around you quite understand the deep connections between that part of the world, the nation states of India and now Bangladesh, Pakistan, Nepal, all these that weren't perhaps there when those connections were first established, right? And this part of the world. The deep history of connections of, that are religious in part, you know, Hinduism is one. Architecturally, we see Hindu architecture all across Southeast Asia. Are young people aware of these connections that go to even the language? You know, there's an amazing amount of Sanskrit and Tamil words
absolutely.
In Malay, for instance, Kadai,
yes,
and all these things, right?
I try very much to insert whenever I can during teaching this kind of connection because, of course, you know, Malaysia is in the center, being the entrepot between the East and the West, and somehow, you know, we are influenced by China also, but somehow it is India that culturally we seem to be very closely related to, you know, not just in Sanskrit, but in cooking and the idea of the king of the mountain, you know, the Raja and all this kind of thing comes from India. And of course, even China, you know, how Buddhism had gone to China and to Japan. But, you know, I really can, you know, all the kids are different in the sense that their sense of awareness, it's different. But mythically, they're interested in this. The story of the churning of the ocean, I think, is part of it. They enact it in their dance. But to look at it historically, you know, the Pakistani partition and all those kind of thing, and why is it that the Modi government is interested to change the name from really Allahabad, which can be very interesting now because it is the city of Allah, and Prayagraj, which is the older name, you know, for this ancient rite. That, to a certain extent, is associated with Hinduism, but it is also projected as Sanatana Dharma. That means this is a kind of relationship with the elements that is timeless with everybody also, you know, not just with Hinduism. Other religions, other religious people also come together in this mela, or the festival, to celebrate water as part of the cleansing agent. But I think the kids, you know, the kids need to be exposed. I think maybe 4 or 5 years later, when they're more aware, they will understand how lucky they are. And you know what happened is that just right after that, the COVID thing came in, the MCO. The Kumbh Mela is known throughout the world as a super spreader also, because, you know, you cannot stop faith. You know, I mean, no Modi or people even powerful than Modi can stop the the sadhus from coming from the caves down to dip in this. The time is called, you know, their destiny has called them, so right. They cannot stop.
Right, and the wonderful pictures are actually you and others taking a dip in the river.
Yes.
And we'll come back to that. We'll take a short break and more from Rami Ibrahim and his wonderful book on the Kumbh Mela. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Dato' Ramli Ibrahim, and this wonderful book of his detailing or chronicling the experiences he and the young people with him are doing a trip to the Kumbh Mela, one of the largest gatherings of humanity on the planet, and that it continues. And you know, Rami, you just mentioned this, the sad fact that we are living in times of pandemic, but also this extraordinary fact that despite that, and despite all the things we're told about social distancing, you can't stop this impulse to gather, this impulse to commune with nature and to commune with each other, right? So this is what the Kumbh Mela, as you said, is unstoppable. There are a lot of, I guess, issues of cultural politics in India today that come out of the Modi government and his mobilizing of of his Hindu base. But there's also cultural politics here in Malaysia.
Yes.
And you have been at the forefront or the front lines of some of these battles. And I wonder if today we see in Malaysia the possibility of deepening an understanding. So I know a lot of us are very depressed and we think that the country is sliding towards intolerance, towards identity politics, that it wants hard borders between cultures, hard borders between peoples. You are providing a kind of bridge. You are breaking barriers. You are saying that actually these borderlands are much more ambivalent. They're mixed. They're miscegenated. We have many ancestors.
Yes,
we don't, right?
Yes, yes.
How is it for you today? What are you battling in on that front, the cultural, the politics of culture in Malaysia?
Well, this is the thing. The book itself represents this, because there was so much politics also, because the Uttar Pradesh or the UP government was interested in publishing the book. But because there was a point, and I think between India and Mahathir, and I think India had stopped the oil palm time.
Yes, yes, I think it was due to do with Zakir Naik, the televangelist.
No, I think it was about the Kashmir thing.
Oh, the Kashmir
and,
thing.
And I think Mahathir had mentioned something about Kashmir. We won't go into that. And so they kind of were we'll be careful about the book. And then what happened again on the other side, We have the case where the CAA or the Citizenship Act that India had introduced, and it caused a lot of demonstrations in, especially in Uttar Pradesh, in the Aligarh University and all that kind of thing. So that, you know, because Yogi Adityanath was very controversial as a kind of an RSS kind of a right-wing conservative person. And so by this time, we cannot continue with getting any kind of a moving forward with the publication of the book. So the book the publication is taken by Sutra itself. So we decided, because everything is ready, the artwork is ready, we decided to publish it ourselves. So yes, I think arts and culture cannot deny that arts and culture is always a victim of a political kind of thing happening around us. But when there is a deficit of trust in leadership, in politics, somehow the confidence and of artists remains, you know, and artists keep on I think being true to themselves. And I think
you mentioned just now, you know, the universalism of some of these values and relationships, right? The relationship to nature, to water, and that this isn't simply about separate religious traditions, and this is something very fundamental in human society,
and
it's very global, right? And someone like myself, and there's a good segment of Malaysians who are attracted to this idea, the idea of a common humanity, of common values. But that seems to have receded against the much more kind of masculinist view of identity, you know, as singular and as opposed to others that needs to assert itself. How do you make an argument today for this kind of broad cosmopolitan outlook that you seem to embody, that also is in this book, that sort of breaks away from the borderlands of Malaysia into a kind of global kind of impulse, right? How do you make that argument today?
Well, I think there are universal values that all reforms, whether it is in politics or in religion, have to abide to, you know, from circumcision of the female circumcision to other kind of many areas that I think, nothing is, you know, the paradigm has shifted. So the universal kind of values of respecting nature, especially at this time, the climate change and that we are so overtaken with profit and hyper-capitalism that we have ceased to understand that it is not just the carbohydrates and the proteins that we have to consume, it is the trace element of the vitamins. And this is what arts and culture is about, towards that universal value. And I think the pandemic has exposed to that. But the other thing, Sharad, that I feel that there is a denial of India, in Malaysia, and you mentioned about the Bujang Valley and all that. Even right up to now, I keep asking, why is it that there seem to be a denial of the artistic kind of connection with India? I've always said that, you know, Sutra is one company that is able to bring curry to Madras. And this is a fantastic thing. And, where India is concerned, Sutra definitely is the ambassador of culture to India.
I mean, you yourself are, recipient of one of India's highest awards.
Yes, the Padma Shri and the Sangeet Natak Academy Award, which are the two.
So it's a recognition of this extraordinary work that you're doing. I'm just wondering if we truly appreciate what it means and how much this can be expanded beyond you, that will survive you, that will be institutionalized, that will become part of what we think is actually normal to make these connections across borders.
Yes, if that can be used, because I keep saying that, you know, even Kuala Lumpur or Malaysia cannot be a business center if it's not a cultural center or culturally awareness of the leadership. So where can we find a leader in Malaysia who is culturally evolved? Mm. And that is not the case with India. So when you do business, whether it is Tata with the Jindal, with the Ambani, or they are patron of the arts, you have to go to business, you have to go to this level. You're not talking about the mid-level. You really need to go on to the top. But these are the people that come to see performances of Sutra also. And also, I think this is where I think, where are the sponsors that want to project business? This is the book that they should be gifting where Malaysia-India business is concerned.
It's very interesting that you bring up the idea of patrons of the arts. And yes, often they are the powerful and the rich. And right, that's been throughout history, right? The courts were patrons of the arts.
Especially in India, right. I think so. Yeah.
And so there is an almost organic connection between power, wealth, and the arts as a kind of maybe balancing element, you know, softening or deepening the way in which power and wealth is deployed or thought of, right? Today, as you said, you know, there is a deficit. How do we address that? Can that be done by fiat? Can it be done by government? Is this something that will need to come from civil society, from the artistic community themselves? Are we aware of the need for more cultural leadership in this country?
I think it comes from leadership, really, because to affect a bigger change, it has to come from leadership. There is a really dire disconnect between artists, scholars, and bureaucrats in Malaysia. The bureaucrats are talking in some high level without even touching the ground. And you can sense this, you know, you can sense with a proposal that they ask you to do online. You know, I mean, no one can fathom this, and it's been difficult to get there. It's who you know. In the meantime, those people at the ground level are not able to reach out. So this is the disconnection, but not in India. And I think in India, the artists, scholars, and bureaucrats seems to be working together very, very much. And this is something that we have learned. There's incredible respect for artists in India.
Well, you know, Ramli, it's stirring in me this kind of wanderlust, this desire to kind of go to India and explore what is there. I was there last year in Jaipur just for the Lit Festival, just before, again, the pandemic hit us and borders closed. But borders will open, undoubtedly, and life will continue as it
Absolutely.
Did before.
Yes.
What, very quickly, what are your plans? What's next for you, Ramli?
Well, there are incredible requests for us to go to India. And so I'm just preparing for next year. You know, I mean, of course, tomorrow, as I told you, are going for the Georgetown Festival. We are doing something for Dubai Expo. And after that, it's India. Uttar Pradesh is just waiting for us to come again. And there's the book to launch in India. And India has always been, for me, India and Indonesia are the two culturally rich that I keep saying that I don't pay homage to New York or to Europe anymore, because these are the Asian country that psychically I'm somehow connected.
Absolutely. I think all of us are. Thank you so much, Ramli, for being with me.
Thank you, Sharad, for having me.
Okay. So this is the book, The Kumbh Mela Praj, Joined in Dance, A Malaysia-India Experience. Now you can go to sutrafoundation.org.my to find out how you can get a copy of the book, or look at the number that we're providing at the bottom of the screen. You can call that number too. That's all we have for Let's Talk this time. Join me again next week. I'm Sharad Kutin, only for Astro 180.